This is Kevin Conroy, and I know that this week in Geek can't handle the goddamn Batman.
It's time to relax. You know what that means. A glass of wine, your favorite easy chair. So go on and indulge yourself. That's right. Kick off your shoes. Put your feet up. Lean back and just enjoy the melodies.
Let's rock.
Welcome out to the inaugural episode of 2018, the true rebrand of This Week in Geek, now simply known as Twig. I am your main host, anchor, secret lover, Mike the Birdman Doll, but I'm not alone as I trek through, well, the weirdness that is the internet. I am joined with...
Alex.
And Mr. Christopher, a very tired Mr. Christopher.
Yes, we are recording this today on the auspicious day of World Radio Day. So that means this was recorded almost a week ago, but that's okay. It doesn't matter to you out in podcast land because today is Sunday. It's lazy. You're relaxing. Hopefully you've had a fantastic week. And the week ahead is not looking as dreadful as, well, hopefully Monday doesn't suck for you. Most Mondays tend to suck, I find.
Yeah, this one was okay. That was okay.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, because you honestly had a fantastic time this past weekend, which we're actually going to talk about during the show, because we got a lot of exciting things to talk about. In fact, Tristan went to his first ever convention this weekend here in Guelph.
Yeah, I had a chance to visit GenreCon 2018 at the Holiday Inn? I was going to say something else. It's the Holiday Inn here in Guelph, Ontario. It was 3 days of convention, lots of cosplayers, lots of fun. Got to see a lot of interesting people, make some new friends. Great time.
Yeah, and that was the same convention place that I think Con G was in a couple years ago, which was another former convention here in Guelph, which we had a chance to attend a couple years ago.
I believe they're related.
I think so. I think some of the same people that worked on Con G work on GenreCon. In addition to that, in this episode, we're also going to have a review of Dragon Ball FighterZ, which is a big deal, as it just got announced for EVO, knocking out Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, which Capcom isn't even supporting this year, so wow. Also, we have a review from Alex, will be his review of The Shadow of the Colossus, the remastered on the PlayStation 4. But in addition to that, like I said, we have an interview from GenreCon with the founder. What was his name? Thomas, I think it was?
Yes, Thomas. Thomas something. Thomas Gufton.
Yes, so we'll be talking with him. We also have your weekly weird news roundup, where I'll be talking about how a computer can give you one of those cute little candy hearts. And I'll just say this. Sweat poo is one of the unique algorithms that came out of that. I'm also going to be talking about everyone's favorite YouTuber, Logan Paul, and what stupid shit he's come up to this week, and how that kind of affects the future of the YouTube platform. What else do we got coming up from you guys in terms of news stories this week?
Well, for me, you might hear something about Amazon. I'll keep that
pretty close to the chest?
Yeah, until we get to it.
That's good stuff. And I understand you've got some really kind of weird website you want us to take a look at without giving too much away before we get there.
How about a global test that has never been completed that has mysterious origins, and I don't want to give too much away. We'll have to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to actually talking about that.
Mysteries
within mysteries. It looks like a GeoCities website. Be prepared.
Very Last Starfighter-esque.
Little bit of nostalgia in there, just for fun.
Now, also coming up on the show this week, we don't have Lee Princess Giggles with us this week.
as I'm he's working that name, I believe.
Yep. So, Lee, until you're here to defend yourself, you are Princess Giggles.
Or Gigglesworth, or Duke of Giggleton.
Duke of Giggleton. I like that. We have a new Satan's Pantry this week, where we try something from across the pond, and it tastes like Band-Aids. But you'll have to stay tuned. You'll have to stay tuned to find out what's going on with that. But without any further ado, let's check in with myself and our first review of the week.
Do you have any hobbies? I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Hold that thought. It's crapper time.
Mike the Birdman Dodd here, and I am back with the revamped Twig. And what am I going to be talking about today? Well, one of the newest additions to the Dragon Ball franchise from Bandai Namco. I'm talking about Dragon Ball FighterZ on the Xbox One. I recently had a chance to play this game extensively whilst I was recovering in the hospital. I didn't have a Sensu Bean. What are you going to do? And what is this 2.5 fighter about? Well, it was developed by the same guys who did Guilty Gear. What does that mean? A game that is really easy to play, but difficult to master by only having so many attacks and button inputs that are remarkably similar. Basically, if you can throw a fireball in Street Fighter, you're pretty good here. You don't have to learn a whole lot of extensive button inputs. So what this game does, it splits the game into three separate story arcs. You have the Super Warrior arc, Super Villain, and the Android arc right at the end. And it involves Goku losing his powers to the villainous Android 21. And I don't want to give too much more away than that, but you do get to see the story from three different perspectives, which I actually think is kind of neat. Plus, Frieza's still surprisingly kind of a badass. I enjoy him, but anyway, I digress. So, gameplay plays out in a story mode kind of like a board game. You have so many moves to get across the board, but you can also rescue characters in this 3-on-3 fighter. So you might be able to rescue Krillin, Tien, Nappa, Cell, stuff like that to build your 3-on-3 team. There are also buffs you can recover, which may give you regenerating health. The character that you're fighting against may have a lower level than you against the computer sort of thing. And it's pretty well thought out, if a little monotonous, because it does take so long to get across some of these boards. I never found myself running out of moves, but it is possible if you waste moves doing dumb things like just wandering around for the sake of it. Now, this game should take you well over 10 hours to beat. It does have the typical array of online modes, like your online competitive ranked stuff like that. There's something called an arena match, which I unfortunately could never get to work. That's the problem with this game, and I consider it to be a launch problem right now. Online can be kind of sketchy. Sometimes you get into a private match really fast. Other times, not so much. But overall, there are some really cool things here, especially when you start getting into the arcade mode, which does unlock Super Saiyan Goku and Super Saiyan Vegeta in their god forms if you can beat it with an S ranking. Now, you don't get any specific character endings, but you can unlock them, and if you can't do that, you can buy those characters with the in-game currency. Let's talk about loot boxes for just a second. You don't have to spend real money on these. Unlock them in-game with in-game currency, and it's all cosmetic, and it's all stuff like for your player card, stuff for online avatars, nothing too extensive, nothing too fancy. But overall, I had a really good time with this game. I've been a huge fan of the Dragon Ball license for years, and seeing what they can come up with this particular engine is really exciting. I'm really excited to see what the Season's Pass is going to bring. You get an additional 8 fighters, and I'm curious to see who they're going to pull out of Dragon Ball's extensive history, especially when you consider GT, Dragon Ball Super, even the original Dragon Ball. So this game gets a absolutely buy it. If you love Dragon Ball, if you love fighting games, give this game a whirl. You'll see it premiering at Evo this year, so you can definitely take that to the Dragon Radar. May you find the Dragon Balls and make a wish upon Shenron. May all your wishes come true. For This Week in Geeks, Twig, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd.
News on the mark!
And of course, it wouldn't be This Week in Geek or Twig without the news! What has happened in the world this week? Well, death, destruction, but we're not going to cover that, surprisingly. We're actually going to concentrate on the news that kind of we find interesting, the stuff that is interesting to us, hopefully to you as well. And we're going to start things off, as we mentioned off the top, with everyone's favorite YouTube douchebag man-child, Logan Paul. What has this asswipe done yet again? Well, after getting suspended off the platform, or leaving temporarily at the end of, I think it was December, for going to the suicide force in Japan, he made a series of apology videos. He tried to do some very sincere stuff, talking to suicide survivors, etc., etc. And people, I wouldn't say gave him a pass, but they're like, okay, maybe he's learned his lesson. Big surprise, he's back this week and tasering dead rats and giving fish CPR. And...
I have a question. Does he represent... Because I'm trying to figure out how old is he? Probably what, late 20s?
22.
Yeah.
22. So, he can be used as a means for our parents and our parents' parents' generation. Like, they point and go, that's a millennial.
Yeah, and it's...
Now, really, my question is, who do you blame? Do you blame him? Yes, he's a douchebag, but do you blame him for thinking it's okay to do this? Or do you blame the parents for a generational thing? Where do you blame the parents for allowing this kind of a person to get the kind of... to get to the point where he thinks this is okay?
If you watch some of his videos, and I encourage you not to...
Absolutely.
I had never heard of this guy.
There is a video where his father plays a game of blindfolded kissing girls, including people who are half of his age.
So then it's
disgusting.
It's the case of the millennial generation, you know, whatever you want to call it, the lazy generation, the lost, whatever you want to call them. It's created by the parents, not by the people themselves. Yeah,
the apple did not fall far from that tree. And
I'm by no means somebody who is advocating for, you know, you should have hit your kids or you should have done. No, what you should have done is maybe not coddled them and said anything you do is okay. Everything you do is great. You can't do any wrong. You can't fail. You can only be successful because you're unique and special. And the problem is some people take that and use that as an excuse to do anything without having any moral compass.
Well, now that he's come back on the platform, this is not completely unexpected. And YouTube has decided to, quote unquote, penalize him by stripping all monetization off of his videos and also canceling his YouTube Red projects right now. But this YouTube CEO, I can't pronounce her last name, so I'm not going to try.
Tell her Susan.
Susan has openly said, we're not going to ban him because he hasn't done anything wrong technically. And my question is to you, the audience, feedback at thisweekingeek.net, where do you draw the line for community content that is in bad taste?
The counterpoint is the CEO's point of view is each channel should be treated fairly, and the three strikes program is there. The problem with this is I don't understand how Logan Paul's channel doesn't already have three strikes for all of the nefarious and evil content that he's doing. And embarrassing.
And this is my thing. I believe, you know, I'm very liberal in my sense of you should be able to do whatever you want, say whatever you want, be whoever you want, but that also means if you do something that pisses off the
masses,
you're
not free from consequence.
You've made your bed, you got to sleep in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you there. Like, this guy, he's openly encouraging his viewers who are in the 12 to 13 range,
and younger,
to do the Tide Pod Challenge. You're asking to send someone to the hospital.
That is something Alex would say to do, because
Alex enjoys natural selection.
Alex likes watching the world burn, but also knows that he wouldn't be influencing children.
And that's the main difference. People who are listening here, I hope, don't have that sort of blind following to everything we say and do.
If you're a 30-something and I get you to do something like that, I think it's hilarious because you are that dumb to do it. So go right ahead and do that. If you're of an age where you can be influenced that easily, which kids are, especially in an age where they're glued to a screen all day, and these are their heroes.
Yeah,
it's the low gang.
Yeah,
these videos are constantly being pushed towards these users.
They always show up in trending.
Yeah, they hit so high on trending, and then these kids start watching them, and then the preferences start to take over, and the algorithm just shows them more and more of this garbage.
I'm a grown adult. If I want to go to Live Leak and watch people get their heads chopped off, I can do that.
Yeah, but as a 12-year-old, no.
Exactly.
So I don't have a clever segue out of this, so please give me something happier.
You want me to go?
For the love of Christ, yes.
Okay, from Alex talking about chopping off heads and watching them online to perhaps delivery of said heads. No.
What's in the box?
Headex.
I'll tell you what, it's not Tide Pods. Anyway, Amazon, for a while now, has been talking, hinting that they might want to get into the delivery business themselves. I mean, they're the largest, I guess, online store, probably outside of Walmart, the largest logistics shipping company as is. They just didn't have any couriers of their own. Well, except in some select cities. Like Toronto, this past summer, they were testing a pilot program where they were driving around in work vans that were branded as Amazon, delivering same-day deliveries to people that were local within, let's say, a 5-10 minute drive of the Mississauga warehouse. And I'm assuming that they did that on the West Coast as well. I just know for a fact that I ordered ink for my grandmother, and it was delivered via a van. A guy walked out, an Amazon employee, and just handed it to her. So they were testing, I guess, probably for smaller items, documents, that sort of thing, local businesses. And probably because it was ink or something that was really tiny.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks to be that they've announced that they're going to be developing their own courier service, tentatively titled Shipping with Amazon, or SWA, which they're saying is going to rival UPS and FedEx. I'm thinking, and what a lot of the speculation is that they might be taking over FedEx's business since FedEx has filed for bankruptcy. They've got this huge infrastructure, this network of things that already exist. They already have all the trucks. They have all the shipping warehouses. It would just be like, I'm assuming they're going to do this dry run, and then if it works, they'll probably just start phasing in all the FedEx trucks.
Which makes a lot of sense, because FedEx has a huge fleet, employs a shit ton of people, but I don't see many of them around anymore.
Well, that's because they closed pretty much all the warehouses. There's one FedEx one for this area of Ontario that we live in, and that's the one in Kitchener.
I remember there being a FedEx in Owen Sound, a fairly significant one.
And the only place you can even drop things off for FedEx is at Staples.
Yeah, because Staples is purely
arranged to have them come.
Yeah,
Staples has like the box on the outside, and some of the hotels have them still.
Yeah,
but for the most part, you see UPS stores all around. You see Purolator because they're connected to the Canada Post, and you see Canada Post. You don't see that. Like I've seen more DHL trucks, which is that other courier that.
Which they suck.
They do. I'll be honest. They do.
They've beaten up so many of my like. I used to order a lot of Master Replicas back when they were around lightsabers. The amount of my lightsabers that were damaged because DHL would just huck them down the hallway or whatever.
Yeah.
Incalculable.
I mean, things might have changed a bit since then, but I've seen more of their trucks around than I do see FedEx. FedEx seems to be exclusively for high-ticket, more expensive items that need more insurance on it. But if they get phased into Amazon, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing. They already have the trucks. They would just maybe hire different people to handle it.
You got a whole bunch of paint, change the paint job on the outside.
But the question is, why would they want to do this? Why would they want to get involved? Is it worth it? Because, you know, people are saying, oh, it's going to be a monopoly. It's not a monopoly. Like, they're just handling their end-to-end business. And they can still outsource it to everybody else. It'll just be Amazon could handle your private store business. I'm assuming they want this to expand their Amazon marketplace so that people could run, like, because they're looking at Shopify and places like that and going, well, Shopify makes private website e-commerce sites. This would be a little thing that helps them grow their marketplace business or having their own competitor to that, because they would say, oh, we can handle your logistics for you already too. Here's your exact quote. Here's your exact rate. But I think the main thing is they're doing this because of the Whole Foods buy. Because if they have, with Whole Foods, right now there's just the one, at least in Canada, we've got the one in Mississauga, and then there's probably a few others spread out. But this would allow having the FedEx infrastructure, or having an infrastructure similar to FedEx, a same-day delivery of fresh produce. Where they, you know, it wouldn't be a case. Right now, you can buy groceries, but it's all non-perishables. This would be, order at 7 a.m., I want my grapes. And by 5 p.m., you have your grapes.
I do like grapes.
I do like grapes. So and eventually got marijuana.
The inevitable conclusion of all things.
Correct.
I have to wonder what it's going to do to push competitors like Walmart out of the way. Because I know Walmart has identified Amazon as its number one competitor.
Yeah.
And with Amazon having such an infrastructure with a potential FedEx buyout like that, I think that could really push Walmart.
And I do think they're doing this to try to ramp up the competition with the expansion that Shopify has had, because Shopify just got that contract for marijuana with the LCBO coming the summertime. So they're going to handle all logistics of this. Well, they're going to want, they're seeing things coming, and then so
yeah,
I just find that interesting that It looks like they're moving forward. They haven't said that they're taking over FedEx, but they're saying they're competing with them. Well, you're competing with a dead company.
All right, Tristan, so once again, don't have a clever segue out of dead companies. What do you got going on?
A company that's anything but dead is Ubisoft, and they have seemingly struck twice. First, they had Rainbow Six Siege, a game that started off fairly weak.
Yep, fairly rough, no single-player campaign.
Yeah, there was no single-player campaign. Generally, people were dissatisfied with the product, and it just flopped on launch. And after relentlessly updating and fixing some of the bugs and the game-breaking issues that were happening, eventually Rainbow Six Siege came around and became a very popular title. It's one of the top-played titles you'll find on places like Twitch and Steam.
It's got a very hot competitive scene.
For the uninitiated, is it like Counter-Strike, or is it a...
It's more tactical than
Counter-Strike. It's a very tactical shooter. If you get shot, you're done.
Because the only online one I played with them, I played The Division. And
it's not like that. It's round-based. The whole point of Rainbow Six Siege is the competitive mode. It's round-based tactical combat.
It's just mostly...
That's the majority of it. Okay. I believe there's some story behind it. But Ubisoft has done that almost exact same thing a second time now with its game, its fighter game, pseudo-fighter game, For Honor. When For Honor first came out, it sold quite well, but within about a month of release, balance problems and a lot of other issues with the game saw a 95% drop in its player base.
I had friends say, I asked for a description of the game, and it was, can't connect and it's dog shit. And that was the initial after the first week or so of them playing.
I bought it. It was fun for a while, but it was difficult to find good games with good connections. Lag was an issue.
Because it was still peer-to-peer at that point.
Exactly. It's peer-to-peer, and it's still peer-to-peer today. As of February 19th, so maybe by the time our listeners are listening
by the time this airs,
dedicated servers will actually be installed into the game, which is interesting as a earnings call for Ubisoft was just put out that says they now have 1 million monthly unique players and 7.5 million total players for this game. So
not
it has
bad
rebounded.
For a game that came out a year ago.
That's a full rebound.
But then that's over every platform, right?
Yes, that's over everything that's on Xbox One, PS4, PC. But 7.5 million users is still strong, considering it dropped off so fast and so hard in its first month.
That's pretty good, yeah.
I mean, Ubisoft's games tend to have a lot of staying power. I mean, I think The Division still has a pretty strong player base. I know they're still making money. Actually, I know Ubisoft recently said they make a lot of money on microtransactions.
Yeah, and they do the microtransaction thing correctly. They don't try to money grab too hard on there. They do put
they're
out
there
paid
if you
content.
Want.
There's, of course, the cosmetic thing, but they like to put out a lot of updates for free. They'll start with a base game, and they'll have some paid expansions or some paid extra content, but there'll also be free stuff. And that's what keeps people playing that base game is, hey, I'm getting this stuff for free. All right, I'll play with my friends. I'll do this other stuff. And it doesn't segregate the audience.
See, I like what they do with Assassin's Creed, and I'm in the minority here, where they're like, if you want to advance in power game, you can do that. Now, some people would counter-argument, but Mike, that's where cheat codes used to be. Yeah, that's when games were released on cartridges, when that was a thing. Now that the name of the game is DLC, the new economy, that's just the way it is. And
cheat
I don't mind paying a few bucks.
Cheat codes were there because once the game was released, it was released and it's over.
Exactly.
It's
so
just the changing face of the gaming scene.
I mean, maybe we'll talk about this on the prototype next month. But that's all we got this week for the news. And, not quite sure where we're going just next, because like I said, we're kind of doing this as we go along here. Actually, no. We're going to throw things over to you, Tristan. We're going to talk GenreCon with
Thomas. I'm throwing it over to myself.
Oh, boy. So we'll be back, guys, right after this.
Take it away, me.
And now it's time for another special feature.
I had the chance to experience my very first convention, and what an experience it was. GenreCon is Guelph, Ontario's Comic-Con, and it celebrates the four cornerstones of geek culture: literature, gaming, film, and music. The convention is about being passionate about something and sharing that passion with other people. Everywhere I went, there were people discovering all sorts of new interests and creations. The vendor room was filled with wonderfully creative people, making incredible things like swords and armor, costume pieces of all kinds of materials and designs, sketches, handcrafted plushies, buttons, jewelry, and the list goes on. Of course, what would a convention be without cosplayers? I saw such a variety of costume designs, with characters both original and established, and the craftsmanship and dedication and care put into their cosplays was just awe-inspiring. You can really feel the passion and effort these people are putting into their work, and I've really gained an appreciation for the cosplay community. Of course, there was more than a vendor hall to carouse, as throughout the weekend you can sit down and learn about an aspect of geek culture at one of the many panels run around the conference center. Cosplaying was a focus of many of these panels, from cosplay tips and prop and armor making, to some heavier subjects like cosplay etiquette and the effects on mental health. These panels, and the people that ran them, created an environment that was welcoming to people and cosplayers of any skill level. I even found myself inspired to give it a try sometime. Other panels included discussions about Sailor Moon, Harry Potter, Marvel, DC, Star Wars, and more. Dungeons & Dragons had a few panels to learn some new ideas you can bring back to your home games for both players and DMs, and of course, there were a couple of celebrities that spent their weekend in Guelph. For example, Sean Ward of The Sean Ward Show, the number one most watched cosplay channel on YouTube, had a table in the vendor hall and ran a panel on YouTube and production design. Charisma Carpenter of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel fame, among other notable roles, sat and discussed her experiences in film and TV and took some great questions from the audience. Nicholas Brendan was scheduled to attend as well, but was unfortunately stopped at the border due to some unresolved past legal issues and could not attend the event. After trying to catch up for 3 days, I finally managed to chase down Thomas Gofton, the creator and mastermind behind GenreCon. I asked him about the convention, how long it's been running, and what the future holds for him and the convention.
My name is Thomas Gofton. I guess I'm like a multi-eclectic entrepreneur. I own a couple of board game. I own a board game cafe and a video game cafe, and then I design board games and make movies, and all that is my living. GenreCon was a culmination of all the things that I do, and I thought I would put together all of the different aspects of the industries that I belong in and try and put them into a hotel and have a little fun. It started off with being sort of an industry event that just exploded into something a little bit bigger. It's growing so slowly every year, which is a good indication that I'm on the right path. And to be honest, it's the kind of convention that the fans come, the people come here, and the thread that everyone says is that it's peaceful, it's fun, it's a relaxing convention, there's lots of parties, people enjoy the networking. You know, it's not the biggest money-making con out there, and that's fine too, because there are conventions that are stressful for that. This is a de-stress con, so.
I've actually heard some of the same thing from some of the people that that I know that have attended here, and they've attended other conventions, is this kind of brings them back to a lot of their first conventions, a lot of those earlier events where it was smaller, more intimate, and a lot more fun. It was focused on just enjoying yourself, and so there's been a lot of positive feedback. As for the theme of the four elements, what inspired the four elements theme?
I've always been into the elements like that, like not like scientific elements or anything, but like the fantasy or the fantastic elements, fire, earth, wind, water. I'm a strong proponent of like grouping things in numbers. And so the four things that I belonged to in terms of like genre media was like, you know, film, music, literature, and gaming. And I wanted to bring those four together in some capacity or form. Now, music is probably the least represented at this point, but it wasn't. Last year we did a live show, a concert, which was really good. But I mean, we had the dance last night that was very well attended, and Disney karaoke, which was very well attended. Apparently,
I was there.
as you were scarring it up, and the Disney karaoke is a clear example of music that comes together with the genres, and so. We used to have a film festival. The film festival no longer exists, but we're going to bring it back next year to bring film back into the mix. Lots of authors here and lots of gaming. I think we focused a lot on gaming this year. So it was just the groups of four, you know. And then like horror, action, sci-fi, and fantasy are the four major genres that we focus on. Not exclusive to, but, you know, those are the four. And so four, four, and four, we figured it worked out. And, you know, the Harry Potter houses are kind of cool, so, you know, we've adopted that and said, you know, we got our elemental houses, and people can go around and I've been seeing people fill out forms and do funny things and scavenger hunts to try and make their elemental house win. I think water's got it this year.
I went with fire myself, but
I went with
you can't win them all.
I went with air.
So there's some unfortunate circumstances with Nicholas Brendan not being able to join here. It seems like everything's still been a success even despite that. Was there any sort of things you wish could have gone differently around that besides him obviously not being able to attend?
Well, we discussed it long before we announced it. We were like, we knew what the risks were with Nick. And that's partially where Charisma stepped up. She's fantastic. She was far. This convention is far beyond her reach. She should not be at a convention this small. But she stepped up and she made it affordable for us to come because she wanted to help get Nick across the border. Nick made some dumb decisions and he's recovering from them. Everybody falls. Everybody slips. You know, it's how fast you can get back up, and we're helping Nick do that because, you know, that's just how it is. We knew the risks when we signed up having Nick here. It didn't work out this year round. We are working with the consulate now. We'll get him in maybe next year. This time we'll wait till he's across the border before we let everyone know what's happened. And then you know, Charisma was here to help us out, and she had a really good time. She's telling me on the way out, she goes, I can't put my finger on it, but there's just something about this city and this convention. She did chalk that up to saying that this was one of the best fan experiences that she's ever had. And she said she's been in some places that, you know, are lavish and expensive and with some of the biggest stars in the world, red carpeting affairs. But she said this was a very, like, she cried, right? She was like, this is a very intimate experience for her. It showed her a side of humanity that she's not used to seeing. Because when you go to the big conventions, it's like cattle prodding. You're like you don't really get a chance to see the intimate side of things. But yeah, this convention has embodied that in the last 6 years. And if I can, I would forego its rapid growth to keep it that way. So,
what are your aims? Are there anything specific you're looking for next year's GenreCon?
Well, I mean, like every year, we're just gonna, like, you know, read the data, refine, execute, make it better and better as we can go. I think next year what I'd like to do is, rebalance things and see what kind of celebrity guests we can bring, and then focus on, you know, I mean, I'd like our attendance to go up by 50% and then sort of like hover around that stage. And I think every year if it's around that stage, it'll be good. I like to make sure that there are programs in place for the vendors, and then, yeah, just keep going from there.
Any other chance of events outside GenreCon that you'll be a part of?
Yeah, well, I go to conventions all over the world. I'm at Gen Con, Dragon Con, but GenreCon is going to be taking part of Ad Astra, GriffCon. We run events for them. GriffCon's in Guelph as well. Some cute little gaming events. Ad Astra's in Toronto. We're going to go there. It's a literature con, and God, we love it. It's great. So we will run a GenreCon room party there for them. We're going to do something at Con Bravo this year. We're going to be helping out Anime North. So we're all over the place in terms of what we can do as a convention to support other conventions, and in turn, as you've seen, they come to help here. So,
anything you'd want to say and share with the fans and everyone who's been here and attended?
Thank you all for coming. Thank you to all of our vendors and everyone who, you know, was here to keep the vibe of love in the air. And come get your geek on next year in February.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Thomas Gofton, all the GenreCon staff, and the volunteers for putting together this convention. All of your hard work's paid off, and GenreCon 2018 was a big hit. I know I'll be there next year, and I can't wait to see how it grows. I'm Mr. Tristopher for ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Stop now, or I shall use more big words at you.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Thank you, Tristan, for that wonderful interview. And of course, I'm going to stop using big words at you. But that means it's time to get into the fucked up, the stupid, the frankly weird. It's weird news! Holy shit! This is the segment of the show that I'm actually most excited about because I love weird shit. I love the conspiracy theories. I love weird science. I love stuff that can't be proven. And we got a whole mix of stuff this week. So I'm actually going to throw things over to Alex first because this is weird. You got something really cool.
Little old me. Yeah, you know what? I thought for the weird news, I thought maybe I would do something like a spotlight on strange and interesting websites that you may not have heard of but have been around for a while. Because when you think about it, the internet is now, what is it, 25 years old this year?
At least.
Well, 93, right? Yeah. But we go by AOL, right?
There's many different iterations of how old the internet is.
Modern internet with HTML markup pages. Basically GeoCities era, that sort of stuff.
The make your own website sort of.
Good old Angel Fire, baby.
Yeah, we're talking roughly 93-ish, so about 25 years. Now, in that time, we've gone through so many changes with Web 2.0 and everything coming out, but there's something that has been on the net for, I'm guessing, roughly...
At least 10?
Since, it looks like since 1999, so about almost 20 years, and it's the Tim Tang test. Now, what is the Tim Tang test? It's the longest and hardest online puzzle in the world.
Okay, say that. Say that three times fast.
Tim Tang test. Tim Tang test. That sound. That's yeah. Okay. Anyway,
that worked better than I thought.
It's basically, if you thought of it, it's an internet scavenger hunt slash puzzle game that nobody's been able to beat. There are hundreds. There's 250 original levels or missions, they call them, and there are riddles that some are puzzle-based where it's like follow the pattern and then enter into the box below what the pattern is. But each page has a part where you either enter a web address and click enter on that or answer the question and click enter. What it is it'll present you with a problem and then it gets progressively worse and more difficult to figure out and more abstract. So what starts out as figuring out the pattern turns eventually into, as far as I got, which was, I believe, about 30 levels deep, 40 levels deep, about 10 years ago, it turns into reading something, interpreting it, and going, oh, I have to travel to this website that is completely separate from them, read the third word on that page, use that to correspond to something that hinted at maybe a monkey, and then make a word out of that, and then enter it into the category. So it's not something that is easily broken down with just pure logic. It can be like a true scavenger hunt wackiness.
So it requires a certain degree of human ingenuity,
yes,
and intuition.
Well, the big thing here is, in this amount of time, there have been over 4 million people have signed up across the world. And this is not something that you can just find. It's not on Wikipedia. It's something that was word of mouth spread from person to person. Over 4 million people have attempted it. And they have a list of their Hall of Fame. And I checked. The website has been updated as of last year. Like it has the 2017.
Yeah, whatever your copyrights and et cetera.
And there's been some content since then, but the Hall of Fame hasn't had anybody on it since 2007. And that was the last time anybody got halfway. And it's not a case of it being dead. The community's still there. That's just, it gets so hard at the halfway point that nobody's been able to think about it. So it's so abstract and so strange. It brings to light, how did somebody think of the test?
Yeah, how did you develop that?
And it's not a prank. It's not a fake test that can't be completed. And the test was made in such a way that some of the websites that you go to are static in that they haven't changed or won't change.
Yeah, that kind of brings it into the question I was going to have, is some of these concepts, what if the page it's supposed to bring you to has been updated and changed and all of a sudden the trail's dead?
Yeah, and initially that's how it sort of was. They had to keep updating it and keep it going. And they still release individual puzzles to go on there. It says there are new riddles and puzzles going in there, but the main test has been unchanged and still not beaten.
Now, just out of curiosity, have there ever been any conspiracy theories associated with this site?
Well, there were, and it's you can find them on Reddit and different places. And it was stuff like, is this a government test? Is this, was it completely a prank? Does it trail into nothing? Is that why you can't complete it? Or if you complete it, do they not post it? Is there some sort of reason behind it? And ranging from that to the weird, you know,
Cicada 31 or whatever.
The X-Files type theories of, this is a test, and if you pass it, you get killed because you're too smart. Or if this is a test, you end
up recruitment tool.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the website looks very 1990s. it's all the 1999 you can imagine in it. It's just missing some of the flashing lights and the seizure-inducing GIFs.
And the very stretched-out images of whatever.
But they have levels actually specifically tailored to toddlers, teens, that sort of thing. So there are puzzles, but the main test, that's the one that nobody's been able to do. And, you know, will you be the first? They even have a Facebook page. There's, you know, you have to sign up. So you have to add your email address because it tracks your progression. So after you've beaten a level, you can go back to it and redo it as you go. So it does save your progress. So you don't have to start from the beginning every time you start.
I have to wonder if it's exploitable in such a way where
there has to be a way to hack it.
Yeah, you can hack into it and find the source code.
Would it not have been hacked in 20 years?
You'd think
this,
so.
This is the kind of thing that 4chan would get a hold of and just go to town.
Yeah, that's my concern is, you know, why hasn't that happened? Why hasn't it been obvious? It kind of makes it feel like there might be something suspicious going on there, something illegitimate.
Yeah, so I'm just clicking, like, they have no one in the world to solve it. That is what really gets to me the most, is that nobody has.
That's weird in 20 years.
Yeah, in the Hall of Fame, I'm just clicking on that quickly, and it says here, so the first person to get in the Hall of Fame was a gentleman named Paul Armstrong. It's a common enough name, so it doesn't matter if I'm saying
yeah.
it. And it's public. And that was in 2007 in April, and it was in the UK. And that was the first person who have passed the halfway mark. They don't say anything beyond that, but nobody since. And the top 15 were all in that time. And you can scroll through the list. There have been 130 people that have done it so far. And the last one was in 2015. I'm just looking through briefly just to see if there's anybody in Canada. There's a few Canadians in there.
Good.
Well, maybe we can add some more names to that list.
Exactly.
We're going to include a link on the description for this video today.
TimTang.com. TimTang.com.
Yep, and there'll be a link in the show description, so be sure to check out the test. I've got a really quick story, which I think is kind of fun, as this week does come into Valentine's Day. So a research scientist named Janelle Shane decided to let an artificial intelligence write those little candy heart messages you always see. They taste like chalk and like shit, generally.
Be mine.
And the results were pleasantly kind of fun. I mean, typically you get things like, I love you, or call me, be mine for life, whatever. So what happened is she fed a bunch of them into this neural network and to see what they would create. So given a set of data, a neural network will learn patterns and it will learn to imitate the original data on her site. However, its imitation is sometimes imperfect. So you did get some good passable messages like dear me or love bun. I'm going to read you some of the more fucked up ones. So some of the passable ones, like I said, some of the more passable ones are love bun, my bear, my, love bot. Things get a little stranger, such as bog love, all hover, fang, time hug.
Aren't those all like furry terms?
It gets weird.
Band names.
Some of the weird ones are sweat poo, you hack, stank love. That's my personal favorite.
That's whole. Those are like those Chinese shirts that have English written on them, but they just like pull the random word, and it just says, it'll be like a pair of pants that a girl's wearing that says fishy on it or something.
I would wear stank love on a t-shirt all day.
I'd wear, what was that, bog something or other?
Bog love.
Yeah.
Sounds like two frogs fucking.
That's. I'm pretty sure that's what Shrek gives people.
Here's another weird one. Love 2000 hogs ye. Shirt face, you look big, and you are bag.
Well, you look big. You look on, big. Depending on who you give that to, it might be a compliment.
It could be. So, you indeed can get love from Hal 9000 with you are bog love and hover sweat fang. Pain. Time hug is another fun one, I think. So, yeah, that's what I got for my weird story this week. I understand, Tristan, you have something involving the temporal fabric of space and time.
Yes, out of the fabric of space and time, a time traveler who claims to have come from the year 2030, not very distant future, I suppose, but future nonetheless, he came back to our time and place and wanted to share some information with us about our near future, and he sat down and did a lie detector test, which he passed with flying colors. He claims his name is Noah. He wants to remain anonymous, so I guess Noah is just a bit of a temporary name for him.
Or a temporary name?
Time hug. He claims he risks life and limb to tell us about the future and wishes to remain anonymous. He has hard evidence that he is from the future, but he's unable to provide us with that evidence, quote, due to a paradox.
Like the self-fulfilling crap or whatever. Uh-huh.
So this 50-year-old man who has taken age-rejuvenating drugs to turn him into a 25-year-old man shared with us a few predictions for the next 12 years or so. Trump will be reelected in 2020. Bitcoin will be used more, although hard cash is also going to be used. Humans are going to fly to Mars in 2028, which... coincidentally is also the same year that public time travel will be unveiled. Apparently, time travel has been possible since 2003, but it's been hidden from the public until 2020.
I have one. Well, 2003, was that one that time? Oh, was that movie that came out?
The Sound of Thunder. No,
no, that was 2004 or five. The one
with Ashton Kutcher, right?
No, that was the Butterfly Effect. That was around that. But no, I was thinking of the one where they went back to like the Middle Ages, or like they went back to not Timescape, time something. Or it was one of those big Jerry Bruckheimer type movies, and it didn't do well.
Oh, The Time Machine.
Not that was. I actually liked that one, but it was the one they went back to like the Three Musketeers time.
Yeah, but okay.
But yeah, I mean, I have one question: is this guy from Florida?
I honestly don't know. He's anonymous. Only known as Noah.
I have a problem with the idea of public time travel. Let's just say you can publicly go back to the past.
Why would you go now?
Well, I think of something like Time Cop and the Time Enforcement Commission. What's to stop you from going back and fucking up the future?
Well, there's a lot of theories about that. I mean, the multiple
infinite timelines.
I'm a big fat guy, and in the past that usually meant wealth and power. I would just go back and then just be lord like a king over everybody.
At the same time, there's also more theories that you can only time travel into established time periods where time travel exists. So until time travel is invented, you can't travel.
Then why didn't he go back to 2003?
Because it's more important to come back to now. So I'm not trying to like defend this guy necessarily.
There could be a relative event now that could split the timeline.
I'm giving you ideas as to why this might happen.
Oh, you know what it is? He came back because he's like, oh, I came back, but it's too late. Star Trek Discovery's already out.
I don't know.
A couple more things he wanted to share with us in our past selves. Electric cars in 2030 can travel up to 600 miles per hour for some reason.
Well, that's not dangerous at all.
If you have time travel, why wouldn't I just travel?
Just go there and then travel and then, back to where
you
started.
Yeah, go where do you need to go and then travel back in time. You've lost no time. Or wait, I guess you still would have aged.
Yeah, you're losing the time. But then there's those age-rejuvenating drugs you can take to just reverse the process of aging. So really, you're spending the time, but you're not really aging.
And I'm thinking, what would it take to power all this?
Fusion reactors? Cold fusion. It would have to be cold fusion by then.
Maybe. I mean,
We might have some help in discovering that stuff because AI is supposed to suddenly become huge in 2021, which is really just around the corner when you think about it.
Really wouldn't surprise me if in deep laboratories right now they do have AI that can literally say, I think, therefore I am.
Keep in mind, though, that this AI just isn't any AI. It's AI that is supposed to be coming in the form of something akin to Google Glasses, but it's a little bit different.
So it's AR. So,
Keep that in mind. Wow. That the next product from Google Glasses or something like that is it might end up actually being an AI.
But you know what
will
really happen if it's connected to the internet with everybody on it? The first thing it's going to say is not "I think, therefore I am," or "Does this one have a soul?" It's going to be "Do you know the way?
Do you know the way, brother?"
That's all it's going to be.
It's going to be some sort of
racist meme. It's going to go, yeah, 4chan's where we want to get all of our information from.
It's going to Skynet us.
The real age of Ultron is just a robot spouting memes 24/7.
If it starts with all your base, I'm like, shut it down quickly.
Yep,
quick, pull the plug.
It's over. Take this time traveler with a grain of salt, though. The interview he did is recorded on video, but you never actually see the lie detector results on screen. So take from that what you will.
Take from that. All right, so that's going to be all we got for weird news this week. Now we're going to take a stroll down to the kitchen and take a peek into Satan's pantry.
What the hell are we eating this time?
Oh, God.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig! It's inedible!
Welcome back to Twig, and this is a segment on the show we're calling Satan's Pantry, where Alex typically goes to the international store, picks up something random off the shelf and says, hey guys, foreign people like it, so why don't we? In today's episode of Satan's Pantry, the initial episode, we visit Hell's Kitchen. And what do you have serving up for us today, Alex?
Well, it's not as foreign as some might think. Like, it's not as foreign as in our pilot, the yogurt pop, which I'm still going to punish everybody.
I'm still tasting that.
I'm going to get the mint flavored one, and that basically smelled like one of those pine tree things you put in your car.
Oh, goody!
See, I'm excited for that one.
You can train yourself up. Go grab one of those air filters and chew on it for a while, and you'll have an immunity in no time.
You take one of those.
I'll eat a Tide Pod.
You put it in the back of the car where just the sun hits it, right? And you put a cup of yogurt right beside it. And that's about what it tastes like. That's what the smell is. What it tastes like.
Oh, good. Pine salt.
You can just dip the pine in the yogurt. And
pine salt.
But you have to get the heat and the smell. And carbonation.
Okay, fart on the yogurt.
Do you think it would taste better cooled?
Oh no, no.
No.
No. The guy at the store said you have to add water to it, and I'm like, how much? And he's like, as much as you need.
A gallon.
I'm like, as much as you need. Basically water with like a water dropper of that. But I saw dudes drink that stuff straight, and they're fucking crazy.
Which was the most brilliant idea.
People I saw doing it.
Were they at the store? Were they just like...
They don't exactly have a good handle on English. Is it? Let's just say that. Like, they're not used to drinking... Like, Coca-Cola is too sweet, which is too sweet for me as well. But, like, this is... No. You can't. You have to be born into drinking this.
You know what? That should be the title of the segment. This is no.
This is no. So this is what they brought.
What we have today.
Yeah, so what do we got?
It could be good. So we got something right out of Scotland. It is haggis and cracked pepper flavored chips.
Ugh.
Oh boy.
So haggis.
I saw it and I was like, $4.75 for a bag of chips, but. It does look like poison, so...
it's $4.75. It's this
black, suspicious-looking bag.
Correct, with leaves. It's a picture of a guy with a horse tilling the land on the top of it. It's from... Sorry, the brand is Mackey's of Scotland. Non-GMO, no trans fat, no preservatives, no good. No, it doesn't say that. but it looks like vegetarian-friendly. Oh, great. Vegetarian haggis.
How the hell does that work?
I don't know. I'm just going to read a little bit of the back here for you. It says, Mackey's thick-cut potato crisps chips to you. So this obviously was made for export.
Right.
Are made from plow to pack. Sorry. The text on here is kind
of
weird.
Your lack of Scottish accent is disturbing.
Can't do it. But it says best before September of this coming year, so it should be fine. This is variety Lady Rosetta. I'm assuming that's the type of potato.
No, it's over there. It's called Rosetta, but they introduced Lady Rosetta. It's a big controversy.
Which is what?
I don't know.
A lady
Rosetta for women.
It's like Doritos.
Yeah, it's like Doritos, but if they called it Lady Doritos, you know, they're not going to do that.
No, they're making those Lady Doritos.
That's the joke.
Google's Google. Who owns it? Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola owns Doritos.
I thought it was Frito-Lay.
PepsiCo.
No, they own Frito-Lay.
It's PepsiCo.
Conglomeration aside, they announced that there was never any plans for Lady Doritos. I mean, that could be a really good backpedal, but the CEO...
So it was just an idea.
The CEO is just not... Would Lady Doritos just
be like sugar and spice?
They
and
went on...
Nice Doritos?
They did go on to explain... They went on to explain that...
sorry. That's terrible.
Never mind.
That's terrible.
Never
mind. I'm bad.
Anyways.
All right, let's
back
do it.
To Lady Rosetta.
Okay, so the ingredients in this sucker. Potatoes. Sunflower oil. Nothing bad there yet. Haggis and cracked pepper seasoning. I am really hoping that it's seasoning they use to make haggis, not they took haggis, ground it up, and here's a seasoning.
See, how do you do that? Like, I can't.
Well, I'm terrified.
You hang it upside down, let it dry.
It does say vegetarian, so I'm assuming it's simulated flavor to make it taste like it.
Yeah.
But I would almost want, like, the seasonings they use in it.
Right.
Because then that would be poison.
Right.
And what else does it say here? Cracked pepper, coriander, pimento, wheat flour, sea salt, yeast powder, blah, 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 yada, 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 onion flavoring. Nothing looks poisonous.
Doesn't sound so bad so far.
Now, as our first
time,
yeah, as our first time doing this, I feel like we should. It's the second time, but first time doing this as a normal segment, we should have a review beforehand as what we think it's going to be like.
Correct.
And then after, as like, you know, what it is.
My personal, it's going to taste like licking the bottom of an old man's balls.
So like
from experience.
Not sweat. Like dried old Scottish man's balls that have been out in the wind too long.
Got tilt burn.
Yeah, exactly. Wind burn from the. You know, and like
we're old talking, man McMurray.
We're talking those saggy ones that are almost touching the ground.
Pendulous.
Precisely.
They go to the caber toss and they're just like, flapping in the wind.
He's just like, they're so dry, laddie. Give him a lick. That's what it's going to taste like. That or just dick. It's just going to taste like dick.
That or just dick. I have a feeling that will be heard often on this show.
Yeah. All right. I mean, there's lots of different dick varieties, right?
What do you think?
Well, let's stop talking about it. Let's do it.
Okay,
All right, so we're going to go with smell first. So, here's a description. The bag feels like one of those bags of chips. Mess!
Kind of
like a Miss Vicky's.
Like a Miss Vicky's. Halfway between Miss Vicky's and Sun Chips before Sun Chips became that weird.
Papery.
Yeah. Let's open them up. Okay, wait a minute here.
The bag split.
Alex's face is.
What the fuck? It doesn't smell horrible.
Okay,
it doesn't smell like anything I recognize.
Tristan's laughing.
It's not overpowering at all. I won't call it bad.
I should like to point out we're trying to eat these on a full plate of spaghetti we just ate. So this may backfire terribly.
I think on an empty stomach it might have been worse. This can at least congeal with the spaghetti.
You know what it smells
but
like?
You end up with vomit on your sweater already.
Spices. Like a spice rack? So you know, just the general smell of spices.
So that probably plays to the whole, they threw the spices they would normally use to season it. And probably,
it smells terrible.
There's probably some sort of...
I don't think it's going to taste
like that. I really hope it's not a simulated organ flavor.
Yeah. It smells like bulk barn.
Oh my god, that's exactly what it is. It smells like a bulk barn.
All right.
All those bins of spices just wafting through the air.
They look like Lay's, basically.
Tastes like a bulk barn, doesn't it?
The floor of one.
Alex's face is particularly amusing right now.
I taste the cracked pepper, but I don't know what the other flavor is.
Haggis.
Allegedly.
No.
Go back.
I'm assuming this doesn't taste like haggis.
Yeah, haggis spices.
Second chip. Here we go.
Further analysis.
I think the rule should be we have to do three each.
All right. Depends on the product. But for chips, yes. Three is good.
I think this would be good with a ranch dip.
Yeah.
Like a Ruffles dip. I don't know where to put it. It tastes sort of like the texture and everything. What's that brand that makes chips that are always in the health food aisle?
I have no idea. I don't go there.
They've got like
what the hell is health food aisle?
Yeah.
No, like
the health food half aisle.
Where they have like the aisle that has like all the gluten-free stuff. And they're a big brand. And they've got like all these weird flavors like yogurt something or other.
All right, nothing for you.
No, they're a brand of chips that I don't want anymore.
Okay. All right.
I'm trying to think of the brand.
I'll take a moment, man. I think they're delicious.
Go ahead. You're a crazy fuck. That's what you are.
All right. Well, so what do you think, Tristan?
Like Alex said, you can tell the black pepper's there. But unless you know what haggis is supposed to taste like, it's really difficult to place the rest of the flavors. Kind of tastes like I'm chewing a Band-Aid.
You know what? A Band-Aid that you rubbed in the gravy.
Like, it's not, like, not unpleasant. It's just, I don't know, there's something...
Exactly, like a Band-Aid.
It's almost... Yeah. It's almost rubbery.
All right, Lee, your go.
I don't find the texture rubbery at all, if that's what you were going for.
No, it's not texture. It just tastes like I'm eating a Band-Aid. It's the flavor of a Band-Aid. I don't know. I've never eaten a Band-Aid, I think.
I have.
You assume
not on purpose.
Band-Aid flavored.
But if I can guess what a Band-Aid tastes like, it would be a Band-Aid...
With cracked pepper on it.
Okay.
I actually think it's delicious. It has a very subtle black pepper, but... I mean, if you're someone like me who really smells taste and tastes smells, it does taste like the smell of a bulk barn.
All right. Okay.
It has a mixture of a bunch of different spices and seasonings all rolled into one. don't know. It's delicious, and I've only eaten one.
We should note that it doesn't. It's not stale, even though it's from overseas. Yeah. Like when they say they're good till September of this year, that's true.
I believe that. All right, they're not good for September of this year. They're good until the end of my stomach. All
right, so I'm gonna give it a whirl now. I'm just putting three of them in my mouth in one shot.
This time?
Probably.
It's nowhere near as bad as yogurt soda. It's not unpleasant at all. It's just
yogurt
weird.
Soda. I kind of almost wanted to see your kids have it.
Oh. That's just mean.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so for me, I really taste the black pepper. There's something. It's unpleasant for half a second. After that, it becomes okay.
But like I said, do you think if you had like a French onion dip?
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe not even a ranch, like a French onion.
Yeah, if you had a dip with this would be fine. Truth be told, this didn't suck.
No.
I was expecting this to be a hell of a lot worse.
By far, it is not.
It's not $5.
Not bad.
It's not worth $5.
No,
it's not worth $5. It's good. It's not worth $5. A bag of the black pepper Lays would be A, more potent, and B, cheaper. Way cheaper.
So that concludes this edition of Satan's Pantry. What is Alex going to force in our gullets next week?
Well, I had a choice. It was between the $5 bag of Haggis chips, which I thought were interesting, or a $9 can of Haggis.
No. Hard pass.
So I hard pass because...
How do you can that?
It's canned.
You put it in a can. How do you can turkey?
I looked at it, and it, like I was like, is there a date on it? And it just was like, forever. Because it's canned. It's not jarred, right?
Non-perishable.
So I was like, oh, great. After the nuclear war, I can starve to death.
Great. Something to look forward to.
But yeah,
that's all that's left.
I'll be making a trip probably to either the place I got this, which was surprisingly at the Weston's Bakery outlet. They have a lot of UK stuff. Or I can go to Italo Foods, which sells Western European food. Mm-hmm. Or I can go to Kishki World Foods, which has the crazy Middle Eastern Asian stuff.
Crazy Middle Eastern Asian.
I mean,
go for it.
And I'll pick up something. And the question is, do I pick up something that has no English on it? Except because they have like cold cut meats that just have a label in English. Everything else is in like Arabic, and it'll just say meat in quotation marks.
Oh my god!
So I could, that's like $2 or $3. I could get that. We could do a couple samples because if it should be edible. They're selling it at a store that is like not in the middle of a wall, hole in a wall somewhere. It's right. An actual grocery store. It just says meat though. I'm concerned.
I would like to try this meat.
I can guarantee you it's not pork.
So, it'll be long pork.
Because it's all this halal stuff. No, it says halal on it. Like the only English is halal and then meat.
Yeah.
So.
Alright, I'm down to try this. This
and maybe meat. I'll pick up another drink that's. I gotta get that mint one. I mean, it's $2 for just for the smell.
Alright. On that note, we'll be back next week with, I'm sure, something that'll make one of us vomit. This has been Satan's Pantry, only on Twig.
This is where it separates a chef from a donkey.
This is a fair request, and I promise I will not judge any person only as a teenager. And that this is no more right than saying all teenagers are drunken dope addicts or glue sniffers.
Hey everyone, Alex here with a review of Shadow of the Colossus PS4 Remake Edition, brought to you by Sony Interactive Entertainment, developed by Bluepoint Games. Now, Bluepoint Games, you might have heard of them before. They're the company that developed the Nathan Drake Collection, the remake for PS4 of the original Uncharted games. So you know that all their stuff is up to snuff and as far as quality goes. Now, Shadow of the Colossus, what can be said about it that hasn't been said the last two editions that came out? It's a fantastic immersive experience that takes place in this vast world with very varying monsters and colossus of size that you have to scale up and find ways to destroy and rescue your loved one. Now, for this edition of the game, it wasn't just an upscale from the original PS2. This is something built from the ground up, specifically intended for use on the PS4 Pro and 4K. If you play this game on a PS4, just a plain PS4 or a PS4 Slim, the game runs at 30 frames per second at 1080p, which is fine. It's 30 frames isn't a lot if you're playing a fighter game or a competitive multiplayer game, but for a single-player game, this is perfectly fine, and you will notice that a lot of games do that. Now, if you're playing on the PS4 Pro, which is clearly the intended way to play, you have the option of running the game at 1440p, which is somewhere in between normal 1080p and 4K, which gets upscaled to 4K, but internally rendered at 1440p at 30 frames per second, so the same as on the PlayStation, or 60 frames per second at 1080p. I don't have an HDR-capable TV, but I do have a 4K-capable TV, so I chose the resolution-enhanced mode, which is the 1440p at 30. At the very beginning of the game, I did try both modes, and I didn't see too much of a difference between them. I'm imagining that during some of the more intense scenes later on, there would have been some improvements, I guess, playing it at 60 frames per second. But I just chose to give it the best resolution I possibly could to see if it was, you know, all that in a bag of potato chips to say. As far as that goes, the game is gorgeous. It is one of the best-looking games I've ever played, and we're talking about a remake or a remaster. It's hard to describe until you've played it in 4K. It's everything as far as the plot, story, gameplay goes. It's everything that you've heard before. It was a PlayStation 2 system seller late in its life cycle. On the PS3, it was a great enhanced remake. One of the flagships showing that this technology could be used, and you could sell a game, and it was enhanced and actually better, and it wasn't just a cheap cash grab. This is clearly a labor of love. They went back and remastered it right down to the very last pixel. This is absolutely brilliant. And if you don't believe me, read it online. Everybody else is talking about the same thing. This is a fantastic game. That being said, there are still some issues when it comes to controls. They've improved some of the controls by adding some quick buttons to do your running and dashing and dodging that required some funny button placements on the original versions. But for that improvement, you still have issues with riding the horse. It's a little clunky and odd, and brings back feelings of back in the day when games had not always the best controls. That being said, you won't even feel it. You won't even really realize it, because you're not playing multiplayer. It's not a Twitch game that you need to have super precise controls. This is about feeling the experience. And I think the best part of this is the price point. Instead of offering it at the full $80 Canadian retail, this is a game that was released at roughly about the halfway point. It put $49 if you pre-ordered it, and it is well worth every penny. It is something that you use to show off what your 4K TV and PS4 Pro can do, and even if you don't have that, it is still, you know, a high hallmark of quality just in the whole experience. I'm actually at a loss for words trying to explain how it feels playing this, because if you play it with, you know, a good set of headphones or a good surround system, and you've got a right TV and it's all lit well, this is a very atmospheric, very amazing game. So, for This Week in Geek, I've been Alex.
Alrighty then.
And that's all the time we got for the show this week. So hopefully you've enjoyed this new version of the Twig Show. I mean, we talked about GenreCon with
Mr. Tristopher.
And that was a big event. And look forward to many more interviews over the next few weeks coming from GenreCon with different cosplayers and vendors. You'll kind of get an overview of the con as we go over the next couple of weeks.
I got the chance to talk to a lot of different people. I saw a lot of interesting things, and I can't wait to share them all one little bit at a time.
We also saw on this show, as you just heard from Alex, his review of Shadow of the Colossus, definitely worth picking up. My review of Dragon Ball FighterZ. Coming up on the show next week, right now we're actually planning an interview with a psychic. And we're going to talk with her about, well, the world of the psychic. And that may be kind of tying into maybe different experiences, maybe channeling. I know recently, for those of you that don't know, my mother passed away. at the end of January, and maybe I've got some questions about that sort of thing. So maybe we'll see what happens when we enter the world of the mind and whatnot. And of course, we'll have more weird news, more interesting stuff that happens in the world of the more mundane sort of. I'm pretty sure there'll be another YouTube story or something equally as insipid will happen between now and then. It always does. As always, if you want to get involved in the show, you can hit us up feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Our voicemail line, 817-717-7202. And we're going to have a new theme song done by Julian and Ori. I know they're both doing different things for us, but they're going to be producing some theme songs for us here on the show. I hope you guys like what we're... I hope you're picking up what we're definitely putting down here. Because I think this is a lot of fun. And having a chance to kind of relax, get on the microphone a little bit more consistently now that I'm home from the hospital, it feels good. I've got my new Twig crew. This is 2018. We've been doing this for 11 years.
Not dying will do that to you.
Yeah.
Not dying will make you want to do things that make you feel not dead.
Yeah.
A new lease on life and a new lease on Twig.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I mean, I've got guys here. I mean, Tristan has a radio background, as you guys have learned from last year's Nerd News.
And
Alex's
a radio
passionate.
Voice.
I like to masturbate.
Well, who doesn't, really?
I just felt like saying that.
Good. I'm glad.
Thank you for sharing, but please don't share that too much.
No, it's okay.
It's okay. It's Valentine's Day week. Spread the love out, however you see fit, as long as it's consensual.
Spread something.
Anyway, guys, so for This Week in Geek, we have been...
Alex.
Mr. Christopher.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodds, and welcome to Twig 2018. Live free or die hard. We'll catch you guys again next Sunday, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't make it!
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my god, there's snot on my face!
And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join... Not a join, what the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa, my god, whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listeners.